Hello and welcome to episode 97 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Ben.
And I'm Craig.
This week, we're talking about, are people leaving churches because of the internet? And self-censorship online. Without further ado, let's get started.
Ben, what have you got this week?
Well, I had the, I don't know if I should call it pleasure or misfortune, of watching a debate on YouTube on the existence and attributes of God earlier today, actually. It happened a while back, but I hadn't seen it. And it was actually at the 2015 Bonson Conference. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I've actually watched, or I've seen most of the debate.
Okay,
maybe not
awesome.
All of it.
But yeah, it was kind of interesting because it was a sort of an odd format because there were six people. So three Christians and three atheists, and they would each do a, like, I don't remember, 15-minute statement, and then the panel would ask them questions. And so it was kind of interesting. And then they would just sort of rotate who spoke. I am not sure that I can say that I recommend it because the Christians do a really great job. But at least one of the atheists seems to use some of the worst arguments I've ever heard, and it just made me really sad. So I don't know that I would recommend it, but anyway, one of the things that this particular guy said at one point, towards the end of the debate really caught my attention. And I'll just kind of summarize sort of, he said, atheism is growing. And then he gave some statistics about how there are more people who, you know, more nuns and younger people who are atheists and so on and so forth. And then he says, the fact is people are leaving the church. Why? Because the internet expands knowledge. That was his justification for more people being atheists and less people being Christians. And so I suppose the bold-faced assumption is, or the assertion is, that, Craig, we're just a bunch of idiots, and if we were just on the internet more often, we would be atheists. Because who believes that stupid Christian stuff anyway?
Dear. Yeah. I think this sort of thing is actually quite amusing to me, but it's also sad at the same time. I agree with you. This isn't a debate I can recommend, and I find that hard to say because it's got Jeff Durbin and Cy in it, Cy Ten Brugge, who I think are both really good at presup apologetics. So I would like to recommend it, but it is just quite painful to watch. And I think I kind of feel like when people make statements like that, it's like they're in a room that's really, really bright and they're wearing glasses that have the lenses painted black, and they kind of think they know where they're heading, and they think they have all the information they need is right in front of them. And they're sort of trying to tell you, who has not got the glasses on, that you're crazy and you don't know what, you know, which way is up kind of thing. When in reality, they're actually just shutting out a whole sort of range of knowledge that they don't even consider as worth knowing or possible to know. And so they kind of shut themselves off from that into this. It's funny because atheists kind of assume that Christians shut themselves off into a little box and don't want to think about the difficult questions. But I feel like quite often it's the other way around.
You know, I honestly would have to agree. And I feel like anyone who's familiar with presuppositional apologetics really at all, but especially somebody who has studied it and feels like they understand it and can do it, this is a debate which is a really great example of just the power and problem of presuppositions. Like you'll have a materialistic naturalist, the atheist guy, who will assume naturalism and then say something that's totally inconsistent with it. Like, no, that's a morally wrong thing to do, or we shouldn't do that. But in the same sentence, he'll say something like, we're just all made up of matter and there's nothing immaterial. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, you don't understand what you're saying, I guess. I mean, I don't really, there was a really, really weird bit on in this particular one about laws of logic, which always come up because it's the classic example of something that is objective, that is immaterial, and that is transcendent. Like, everyone submits to these laws. Otherwise, we couldn't have rational conversation or thought. And so the atheist has to come up with some justification for how that works in their worldview. And I just find that more often than not, it's either misunderstood or you just quickly get into arbitrary preference or just, you know, a lot of times one of the guys wanted to assert that it was a social convention, but that doesn't explain why everyone follows laws of logic. Like, could they be changed in different societies? Well, no, of course not. Like, a contradiction is still false, regardless of society or cultural values, right? So there just isn't any accounting for that outside of a Christian worldview. And I don't, yeah, I don't know. It just seems so obvious to me. And I don't think it has anything to do with me being smart or anything, really, because I didn't figure that out. Someone came along and pointed that out to me. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, you know, it's kind of like running into a brick wall. It's like, oh, yep, there's a wall there. you just kind of can't miss it, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned laws of logic, because I've had this discussion with a friend of mine quite a few times over the last probably 12 months. And he's got a very scientific brain. He enjoys talking about this kind of thing. But if we were just dealing with ethical laws, like moral absolutes, then it's easier for the atheist to argue that those are societally defined, if that makes sense. Because they try and go down the line of, well, ISIS has a different moral good to Christianity. So therefore you could argue that in different parts of the world, different moral, evils are not so evil or whatever. Of course, if you bring them back to, yeah, but do you actually live that way? Do you think that if we lived consistently with ISIS's view of what's good and what's evil, that the world would function in a healthy way and all that kind of thing, then they're forced to sort of reevaluate their presuppositions about ethics. But as soon as you introduce things like logic and, in particular, the laws of physics, which is actually what that Bruce Gleason, I think his name is, he kept saying, you know, this is about the laws of physics. Like, God doesn't change the speed of light. Things always happen the same. So there are these laws of physics. And I was like, you bringing up something like the laws of physics is arguing against your own position, because there is no fundamental basis for why that would A, exist in the first place and then continue indefinitely into the future if all there is matter and motion. So yeah, it's hard to kind of listen to and take seriously if you sort of think about it on that level.
Well, and one of the reasons I'm not necessarily recommending it, this one in particular, is because of how frustrating it is.
Yeah.
When you try really hard to be clear and to speak in such a way as is understandable to another person, and you genuinely want them to understand your position so that you can have better dialogue, which I believe is the case on the part of, at least the two guys you mentioned, I know well enough to know that's their intention. And yet there still is just this, and I don't know if it's intentional. I'm not saying that it is. I'm not trying to accuse them of anything, but it's still frustrating when you spend 3 hours on something and, you know, the classic example, and I've mentioned this before, but it's just particularly frustrating because I've seen it so much, is the sort of transcendental argument for around morals for the existence of God, that you need a moral lawgiver for there to be objective transcendental morals that every culture submits to. That, like, so if ISIS flies a plane into a building, is that wrong? Or is it just their preference? And as soon as you cross cultures, like that's a good example that you bring up. I think it's a perfect example, because as soon as they cross into our culture, we want to say, no, you can't do that. Like, you can't do that to us. But whenever you say you can't or you should or you ought, you're now in the realm of morals, objective morals. You can't have those unless you have some transcendent mind who sets morals. And the only consistent transcendent mind is the Christian God, is the triune God of the Bible, right? And then, So I think that's totally coherent and consistent, and I think it's persuasive and convincing as far as the truth of Christianity. But the response often is, even from Christopher Hitchens, one of the smarter atheists out there, not, obviously he's the late Christopher Hitchens now, but when he was doing this, certainly was, I thought, one of the more intelligent folks. But this Bruce Gleason guy did the same thing. They both say, oh, so you don't think I can be moral without God? No, I'm not saying that. Like, I don't even care really about that in this particular context. What I'm trying to say is, do you have a justification for the moral things you do? Like, is that consistent with your worldview? Yeah. No, it's not. No, you don't. Right? And so it's not about, do you do good things? We could have a whole conversation about whether you do good things or not and what those are, but that's not the conversation we're having. And it doesn't matter how clear you are. There's just some weird I don't know, some sort of conversational barrier that you just cannot get through.
Yeah. The other thing, I don't know if you picked up in that first opening talk that Bruce gave, he was talking about fallacies. Like he was sort of talking to the audience and saying, I hope you guys are up on your fallacies and you know what different logical fallacies mean and how to identify them. And then
his opening statement was straw man after straw man after straw man.
Well, exactly right. Exactly right. But even the sentence that you mentioned about knowledge and the internet being the gateway away from religion or Christianity in this case, I remember in the very, very first episode of Tech Reformation where you sort of asked each of us why we wanted to do this podcast. And one of the things that I remember saying that I thought was sort of interesting about the tech world and Christianity and how the two sort of interact is that Tim Keller brings up the fact in one of his books, I think it's Reason for God, where countries like Korea that are super high tech went from 1% to 30% Christian in the last 100 years or whatever that statistic is, while they were becoming more technologically advanced. So the idea that technology or even the internet specifically, something that gives us access to information, automatically somehow disproves the truths of the Christian faith and the claims that the Christian faith makes, is just a complete fallacy in and of itself. It's not logical that if Christianity could be disproved by information, then maybe it would be logical, but you can't disprove God, the existence of God, because he's supernatural, and we have so much historical and archaeological, evidence, manuscript evidence for Jesus' existence and his life and death and resurrection that it's pretty dishonest to try and argue that it's all just made up and came out of the ancient world as a kind of nice story that people have perpetuated. So. Yeah, I think there's huge issues there with honesty and integrity on the part of the atheist who tries to say that that more knowledge will equal less faith in God, because I think that's just a silly sort of thing to connect those two. You can be a super intelligent person and still have a really strong faith in God.
And I don't know this man well enough to judge the intentions of his heart in any way, shape, or form.
Sure.
So I'm going to be the first one to clarify. I'm not accusing him of being dishonest. I am confused as to why there is so much confusion to begin with, because it seems fairly straightforward and coherent as far as I can tell. So I wonder if there is, over and over and over again, several of the atheist guys would say, I really am open to this. And I want to believe them when they say that, because my first instinct is not to just assume someone's lying, right? And yet you watch for 3 hours and it's like, well, how are you still misrepresenting me so badly by the end of this thing? Yeah. But anyway,
well, I guess that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying, sorry, I want to clarify. I'm not saying he's a dishonest person in general.
No. I know you're
but
not.
But I think for him to stand up against fallacies and then to use them continually himself is kind of it's just not a very helpful debate tactic when you're trying to get to the truth of the matter.
Well, sure. And we can point out that it's not consistent and we do hypocritical and inconsistent things. And we hope that when people point them out to us, we repent and stop doing them. that's part of what it means to follow Jesus. He's not. And so we wouldn't expect the same thing from him. Although it would be great if he were consistent in those things. So I got a little distracted there on just the debate itself. The point that you rightly brought us back to is, does the expanse of the internet and even more broadly knowledge, the accessibility of knowledge itself to people, is that really what's causing atheism to grow and people to leave the church? And you, I think, helpfully demonstrated, even just from an empirical perspective, there are places where knowledge is increasing and the church is increasing. And so it seems like that's not exactly a general rule we can pin down in every single case. But I also want to think about it from a theological perspective, because it seems to me like this statement presupposes the falsehood of Christianity. So Christianity, the Bible clearly teaches in Romans 8, verse 7, for example, the mind that is set on the flesh is hostile to God, for it does not submit to God's law. Indeed, it cannot. So we move very quickly from the not submitting to God to the inability to submit to God. And so there's this idea and consistent throughout the Bible that we need to be born again. We need the Spirit of God to do a work from outside us on us that we cannot do ourselves. We need to be made new, regenerated, born again, brought from death to life. Those are all a lot, several of the language and imagery in the Bible of what needs to happen to a fallen human in order for them to believe. And so in that sense, we join with the Reformers in saying that regeneration precedes faith. So it's not the case that this is an eminently intellectual pursuit. It's not going to be the case that if we just educate people more and more and more, then eventually they'll see the truth or falsehood of atheism or Christianity. That's not the case. The trouble is that the Bible says clearly that the unbelieving mind is hostile to God, not just needing more evidence. And so I think we can disprove it both empirically, as you did, and theologically, as I just tried to do, and just point out that it's really assuming and asserting rather than demonstrating the claim.
Yeah. And I think importantly, I mean, that verse you brought out was great. I think importantly as Christians as well, if we honestly believe that the Bible is true and what it says about God and who he is, then verses like Colossians 2:3 about all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge being in Christ, and the fear of the Lord being the beginning of wisdom,
yep,
from Proverbs 9:10, those are actually really, they're kind of freeing things. Like, they should help us to have confidence in the faith that we have. But also, for those of us who do like to think about these things and from a presuppositional standpoint and kind of go, you know, right back to the beginning, how do we know what we know and those kinds of things, it is really helpful to understand that without God, you can't. There actually is no answer for these things that people are trying to find the answer to. And so, I totally agree with what you said about the theological aspect is just as important as the being able to sort of debate it on a relational level or whatever.
Yeah, just to summarize this one, an encouragement to our Christian brothers and sisters listening. Jesus Christ says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Jesus says, I am the truth. Like, I'm the very definition of what's true. Truth has no meaning outside of me. I define it. And so, Jesus, as the truth, is not afraid of skepticism or scrutiny. He's just not. He doesn't need to be afraid of skepticism or scrutiny or other things that are true or doubt or anything like that, because he is the truth. He's the very definition of it. And so we can be confident knowing that we know the one who is truth and we follow him.
Hey, welcome to, again, what would normally be our ad spot, but just like last week, this week we are also going to be, instead of pushing products that we love and telling you about them, we want to encourage you guys, our listeners, to go and donate in support of hurricane relief, especially like Puerto Rico. If you haven't read about what is happening in Puerto Rico right now, It's just utterly destroyed. The islands in the Caribbean, they've just got hurt really hard by all three hurricanes that have come through in the last few months. There's just so much devastation. They need help. And if you could spare a few dollars to go help them out, that would be fantastic. We can't all obviously go help ourselves. So we got to do what we got to do. There are a whole bunch of charities, obviously, that are helping out there in the Caribbean and in the Southeast United States. But the one that we're going to be pushing you towards is Samaritan's Purse. We have confidence in their ability to use your money wisely. We're not affiliated with them in any way. They didn't ask us. We didn't ask them. We're just pushing you to a link to donate. So if that's something that you can spare a few dollars to go do, that would be fantastic. Give joyfully and give freely. And thank you for listening to Tech Reformation. You guys are fantastic.
Craig, what have you got this week?
I came across an article on Engadget, which is titled Fear of the US Government Led Me to Censor Myself on Twitter. The reason this is kind of, it was interesting to me is because I was saying, letting Ben know earlier, right now, Australia is in the middle. We kind of do everything 2 years behind the US. So, like, we get movies quicker than that. Like, we get all the Hollywood movies a couple of months after they come out or whatever, or when they come out. But in terms of societal changes, it's more like, you know, this kind of a 1 to 2 year lag, it seems like, in terms of the liberal push in society. So we're right in the middle of what's called a postal plebiscite, which is just means our federal government hasn't had hasn't been able to make a decision either way on the same-sex marriage debate at a policy level up until now. And so they've put it to the people for a vote, which is kind of a terrible idea in some ways, because governments should be able to take responsibility for these kinds of things. And hopefully the people in government have been, you know, put there for a reason. And, you know, we pray that they come to faith if they're not already believers. But in the meantime, we're going through this process. And I have kind of been thinking to my, I'm a pretty honest person, I think, online, in terms of if people want to talk to me about a particular topic, I'll generally engage with them unless I just don't have time or something like that. So one of my friends posted something on a public Twitter feed. And in responding to that, I was just kind of starting to think through this whole idea of freedom of speech and how free actually are we at this point in time. Australia is kind of still in this kind of up and down thing where everything's up in the air. I know in America, the SCOTUS decision has been made, and that, you know, gay marriage is now in. You hear kind of people like James White saying, oh, you know, it's only a matter of time until Christians aren't allowed to say X, Y, Z at all. And we've heard stories of people, you know, getting in trouble for using the wrong pronouns and all that kind of thing. So it's just something that's kind of on my mind in terms of as a Christian online. We've talked before about how do you respond as a Christian online. I guess this is more about how do we interact with freedom of speech? Is that, you know, how do we understand that? How do we deal with it? How do we sort of participate in it without being irresponsible, I suppose? So it's kind of like a how not to get hacked, but without any instructions. It's just something I've been thinking through recently, and it's, instead of getting hacked, it's more of a how do you not get yourself into huge trouble online in discussions. So this person who wrote the article is from Singapore. They've got a pretty strict governmental system, and she said that she grew up sort of being taught not to have political opinions, and then moved to the US and found out about this thing called freedom of speech, and that it was basically a human right. Thought that was really beneficial to her life, and so she started to express her thoughts a little bit more. And then more recently, I don't know all the ins and outs, but the article goes into a bit of detail. I won't read it. People can look it up later. But the DHS, do you know what that stands for, Ben?
Department of Homeland Services?
Yes, thank you. Security, Homeland Security.
Oh, Homeland Security. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, so they're updating their policies in terms of how they identify and sort of monitor immigrants. And so the update means that they can now use social media handles, aliases, and associated identifiable information and search results. And they can add that to someone's existing records of name, date of birth, those kinds of things. And so it's kind of, yeah, it just kind of struck me as this person's kind of saying, I don't want to have to, I don't want to let my fear get in the way of me expressing myself and my ideas, but it already has. So she's saying that she kind of feels like now that she knows that this new policy is coming in, or this revision, that she's having to go back to sort of censoring her own posting so that it doesn't look to someone else who doesn't know her like she might be saying that something that's too far outside of society's way that society's moving, or the immigration system is, you know, outside of the way they want to sort of treat who they let in, who they don't, and all that kind of thing. I don't know, Ben, have you had any sort of interaction with this kind of thing? Does this kind of thing, is it on your radar at all? I know, like I said, for me, it's kind of been something that I haven't stopped posting online. I haven't shut down all my social media profiles, but I do find myself as a Christian wanting to walk that line of giving the truth in love, but also being, what is it, like, as wise as serpents, but as friendly as doves,
Matthew,
or whatever.
10,
like
16, I am sending you out as sheep among wolves. Therefore, be cunning as serpents and innocent as doves.
That's it. Yeah. So it. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this? Is it something that is a big deal in the US, or is it still sort of open slather? And this girl's obviously got a different perspective coming from an immigration sort of thing. But yeah, I know for me, it's just something that's kind of been on my mind over the last few weeks. So I wanted to see what you thought.
So you're talking, just to clarify, specifically about issues of Christian liberty and issues of free speech and the federal government declaring things as hate speech and, you know, protected speech versus not and things like that. That's what you're talking about?
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of the old, that's where it could all head. It could head to actual laws being put in place for that kind of thing. But also just, I guess it also has more sort of harmless in some ways impacts on things like just public shaming of people who disagree with the cultural norm, or and as Christians we obviously put up with shame and persecution. That's part of standing with Christ instead of standing against him. But yeah, certainly I guess if it is likely to head down the road of litigation and all that kind of thing, how do we still be as wise as serpents and as innocent as doves in that kind of setting?
Yeah, I think so. By way of practical things that I try to do or would recommend to others, I can only really think of one. And so I'll say that up front, and then whatever the rest of the conversation is, I just apologize for on my end. but I will say that recently, recent weeks and months, I have really been putting a lot of thought into, as you know, in seminary studies, I've been in just finished up systematic three, which was, it ended with eschatology. Which made me think a lot about the importance of doctrines related to each other. Meaning, we all, Christians, agree that there are certain issues that are adiaphora, that are things that we don't need to divide fellowship over, eschatology being one of those, at least for most. You know, and then there are things that are not adiaphora. So, issues like baptism, mode of baptism, who receives baptism. Those are things that even just practically we kind of have to divide over because we disagree about who's going to be baptized. And so we have to have separate churches where each type of person is baptized. The point being, not everything obviously is essential for salvation. And beyond that, not everything is essential for fellowship, Christian fellowship. And beyond that, there are things that are just really open for dialogue and debate and discussion among Christians about. And then just taking that, so maybe we can, people have put them in primary, secondary, tertiary buckets. I like to use more helpful names. So absolutes, things that you have to believe in order to be a follower of Christ, things that you have to believe in order to be with God forever in heaven, absolutes. Second thing, convictions, things that I would probably still take a bullet for and would defend tooth and nail to the end, but you don't have to believe it to be a Christian. So maybe an example there would be Calvinism. And there's a range probably in the conviction realm. And then finally would be opinions. So, and obviously there's a range there too. You have stronger opinions and weaker opinions, but you might put your eschatological view somewhere in there. And so just thinking in terms of essential for salvation, essential for fellowship, and then areas of discussion. And I bring that up to say, in my own life, I want to be really, really clear which one's which. Because there are only certain things I'm going to go to the mat over. And even beyond that, there are only certain things that I'm going to intentionally bring up that I know will be areas of disagreement. So
sure.
Yeah. Certainly in-house, there's probably a lot more of those because we're all Christians and we can agree to disagree on things and still love each other. Out of house, outside the household of faith, that's a smaller number of things, just frankly. Because I want to get as quickly as I can to a gospel presentation so that someone might repent and believe, might bow the knee to the Lordship of Jesus Christ. And I don't want to stack up unnecessary hurdles. Example, looking or talking or dressing a certain way. And if you push any of these too far, I'm sure you could find a place where I would disagree with myself. So I reserve the right to change my mind, but Yeah, I mean, just really thinking in terms of evangelism and discipleship being primary in terms of bringing God glory, of course, and then what's going to be the most winsome towards others. I want whatever I believe to be persuasive and attractive to other people. And if I'm always going to the tertiary things to argue over, it's just probably not going to be. And I'm the last person to say that that means those things are unimportant and you should never talk about them, because I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. I love talking about those things. That's why I study them and read books and write papers on all these topics. But there is a time and a place for everything. And so just trying to have some sort of Christian wisdom in that, I think, can be really helpful. And it's going to be different depending on the person and their conscience. So that's really something you've got to work out between you and the Lord on what you're going to major on and what you need to minor on.
Yeah, that's good. Good advice, good thoughts. I think, for me at the moment, this is the kind of thing where it's similar to the last topic in a way, because there's actually a lot of misinformation and fallacies and things being thrown around about this particular issue in Australia, which I'm sure is the same as when Christians in the US were putting up with this particular debate or feeling like they had to get involved. Less and less, I'm feeling like it's like you said, I think it is more of an external issue. It is super important as a Christian to have, you know, to know why marriage is the way that it is and has been designed between a man and a woman for life and all that kind of thing. But there is also just a sense of, like you said, having, in terms of online interactions, having wisdom and focusing on evangelism and reaching people's hearts rather than just debating with them at a head level about something that ultimately the world isn't going to capitulate on these things quickly. You know, like they're not just going to change their mind on moral issues at the drop of a hat because someone has a good argument in the other direction. Until their heart changes, it probably won't actually make a huge difference to them anyway.
Yeah, and on that point, I'm first in line to slow things down when people start saying you're never going to win somebody to Christ by argument. Only because I don't ever want to denigrate knowledge. Like, I think the Lord wants us to love Him with all of our mind. I think He wants us to think very deeply about who He is, who we are as His creation, how we should live as a result of that. And then I think He wants those thoughts to affect our affections, to cause our emotions to be stirred towards Him and our neighbors, and to then go do activities, self-sacrificial activities for the sake of those around us, right? So it certainly doesn't stop in the mind, but I can't see any way that it could be less than deep thoughts, right? Because I would think that the life of the mind influences the life of the emotions and the will, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's definitely, I've been saying this a lot lately, it's sort of a tightrope of truth that we're all walking, right? There are ditches on both sides, and we don't want to fall into either of them. And so, you know, as we're walking this sort of knife edge, if I can use another illustration, we have to be very cautious, because ultimately, as we are trying to win people, ultimately we're trying to give God all glory and honor and praise due His name. And that is our ultimate motivation.
That's right. And and that's actually a responsibility as well. It's a motivation and it's also a responsibility on the other end. We have a responsibility to, that's why we're told to speak the truth in love and to give a reason defense, but with gentleness and respect, because we are as His followers to make God look beautiful, not ugly.
Right.
So there's plenty to think about and talk about there. But that's just something that I've been thinking through. Do you have any final thoughts?
Well, and there are certain things that we can't do, right? Like I can't lie. So if somebody asks me a direct question, I'm not going to lie to them. Right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, and it just depends on the person and the topic and the time and the place, right? The truth doesn't change, but the time that you share that truth and the tone with which you share that truth absolutely can change in Christian wisdom. And so depending on those things, there are ways and times in which I would say things, and there are subjects that I just wouldn't bring up with certain people. because all for the sake of the gospel and the glory of God, I hope.
Yeah.
That certainly is my prayer, and I know the same is true for you.
Yeah.
If you would like to connect with us, you can do so by jumping in our Slack team. Sign up at slack.techreformation.com and help all of your atheist friends out there see that the internet actually isn't really for knowledge, it's for cat gifts.
Nice. You can also visit our website to search for past shows and topics. Just hit us up at techreformation.com or contact us on Twitter at techreformation.
This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. And I ain't looking back.